Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're jumping straight into a really powerful investigative series from the Lone Star Ledger. It's called Billionaires Behind the Pulpit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we all kind of know the foundational myth of Texas politics, right? It's all about rugged independence, fierce individuals, grassroots action.
Right, that's the story, the cowboy boots that don't mess with Texas. Whole image.
Exactly. But this series, well, it really challenges that whole myth. It lays out a case that what often looks like this, you know, energetic conservative populism
groundswell
is actually a very carefully constructed top-down political system engineered by just a few extremely wealthy individuals.
And that's our mission today, really. To give you the shortcut to understanding that system structure, we're going to unpack how two specific West Texas billionaires, Ferris Wilkes and Tim Dunn, both from oil and gas, have, well, quietly built this huge political and policy network.
Huge is right. Potent enough to influence the legislature, actually draft model bills. And this is critical to decide which Republicans even get through their own primaries.
The sheer scale of the money is, well, it's staggering. You're looking at combined giving, political and policy, easily over $150 million just since 2010.
That's not just a donation anymore, is it? That's a sustained investment, building an entire political machine.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's fascinating about the sources here, the Ledger's work, is how meticulous it is. They've traced campaign finance records, PAPI funding, and then tracked how that money lines up almost perfectly with specific policy outcomes.
So the core argument becomes pretty clear.
It really does. This concentration of money, it's essentially replacing political consensus. It's establishing this relentless ideological discipline inside the Texas GOP that, frankly, just wasn't there a decade ago.
Okay, so let's start right at the top then. Who are these architects, these kingmakers who've decided they want to, well, rewire the statehouse?
Well, the first is Ferris Wilkes. He and his brother, they made their fortune in hydraulic fracking. They sold their company, Fractech, back in 2011.
For how much?
About $3.5 billion.
Oh.
So suddenly they have these immense, almost limitless resources to pour into their vision for Texas.
Wow. Okay. And the second key player?
That's Kim Dunn. He's the founder of CrownQuest Operating, another energy company. Dunn was actually already channeling significant oil profits into religious and political causes back around the Tea Party era.
So they both come from that energy background.
Right. And they share this deep ideological conviction. They explicitly frame their political work as defending what they call biblical conservatism.
And when you put their $150 million plus giving together,
the result is clear. They've built an infrastructure that honestly rivals the official established Republican Party structure in Texas. It's huge.
Rivals the party itself.
Yeah. And their goal, it isn't just supporting candidates they like, it's much bigger. It's about enforcing a very specific, very stringent ideological discipline. What they fund, they essentially control.
Control the campaigns, the talking points.
Exactly. And they control the ratings that tell lawmakers how conservative they are.
Or aren't. That distinction feels really crucial. This isn't just typical lobbying, is it?
Oh, no. It goes way beyond that. This is building a separate, almost parallel party mechanism.
Okay, so let's unpack the nuts and bolts of that structure then. What are the key parts of this this big operation, moving beyond just writing campaign checks?
It really is a web, multi-layered. And it's designed for maximum leverage, particularly in those low turnout primary elections.
Where a smaller amount of money can have a huge impact.
Precisely. Okay. A relatively small amount of highly targeted spending can completely swing an election there.
Right. So let's look at the media and messaging side. You've got groups like Empower Texans and the Texas Scorecard. They sound like grassroots groups, maybe?
They do, but they function more like internal watchdogs for this network. Their main job is creating and publishing this really detailed conservative purity scorecard for every single legislator.
So if a lawmaker steps out of line, say, votes against a school voucher bill that the network wants,
then the scorecard makes sure everyone knows. They're immediately attacked, maybe branded a rhino Republican in name only, and often they find themselves facing a primary challenger funded by the network.
That creates enormous pressure, I imagine.
Huge psychological pressure on incumbents.
Yeah.
They live in fear of being labeled a dissenter by these groups.
Okay, then you need the actual money delivery system.
Yeah.
The sources point to the Defend Texas Liberty PAC as the current sort of flagship for the heavy campaign spending.
That's right. And that name, Defend Texas Liberty, it's clearly chosen to sound grassroots populist, isn't it?
Absolutely.
But that PAC spent millions just in the 2024 primaries, backing candidates who were loyal to the key planks, the school voucher push. opposing DEI initiatives in universities.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion, yeah.
Right. So Defend Texas Liberty is the money mover. It's designed to bypass the traditional party committees entirely.
But, okay, money alone doesn't write laws. You need the actual legislation. And that brings us to the Texas Public Policy Foundation, TPPF. What's their role in this ecosystem?
Ah, TPPF. Ugh. They might be the most critical piece of the puzzle. It functions basically as an external legislative drafting office for this whole network.
Drafting office, so they're writing the bills.
In effect, yes. Their research staff, they don't just write academic papers. They draft model legislation, sometimes entire bills. And these bills are later introduced at the Capitol, often word for word.
Word for word.
But the very candidates the network helped elect. They're supplying the intellectual framework, the legal blueprints for the agenda.
Wait a second. So TPPF is doing the legal heavy lifting for the PACEX. That really changes how you think about a bill moving through the Capitol.
It really does. It means the ideas aren't necessarily bubbling up from committees or from constituents. They're often drafted in this think tank and then sort of injected into the process by legislators who are already vetted by the donors.
Okay. And then finally, to make sure these political goals hit home, you mentioned religious outreach groups linked to the network.
Yes, and their function is also crucial. They work to frame the political objectives, things like school vouchers or changes to school curriculum, not just as policy debates about budgets or effectiveness.
But as moral issues.
Exactly. As moral imperatives rooted in specific religious doctrines, that shifts the whole conversation away from pragmatic politics and towards, you know, absolute moral authority.
This is where the source material really gets into the mechanics of control, how this influence actually works day to day. The report details a specific three-step system they use. Very effective, apparently.
Yeah, it's pretty clear. Step one is funding the battlefield. The huge donations get funneled strategically into PACs right when they can do the most damage or create the most leverage.
Which is during those low turnout primary elections.
Exactly. That immediate cash infusion targeting specific incumbents creates maximum political risk for anyone even thinking about dissenting from the network's line.
Okay, step two, media pressure. We mentioned Texas Scorecard and its affiliates.
Right. And they are relentless. They don't just critique. Mm-hmm. They actively campaign against dissenters. They shower praise on the approved legislators, but launch these very visible, often damaging attacks on anyone who votes the wrong way, painting them as corrupt, unprincipled.
Making an example of them.
Precisely. And step three is the ideological vetting. Candidates are consistently warned, often privately, that opposing key planks like, say, voucher bills or certain social policies means their political career might be over.
That fear of being primaried.
It's the ultimate tool of discipline in this system.
And we saw just how devastatingly effective this can be back in 2019, didn't we?
That's the perfect chilling example of their leverage. The whole incident with the House Speaker at the time, Dennis Bonin.
Right. The secret recording.
Exactly. A single secretly recorded meeting between Bonin and an operative from Empowered Texans, one of the network's main groups, that recording surfaced. And it ended his speakership.
Yeah.
Just like that. It sent a clear message. This donor-backed machine is willing and able to destroy the career of even the most powerful politician in the Texas House if they obstruct the agenda.
This level of intertwined politics and, well, religion brings us right to what the source calls the theocratic thread. It's right there in the title, Billionaires Behind the Pulpit.
Indeed. And it's not just incidental. Both Dunn and Wilkes are deeply religious men. They serve as elders in their churches. Wilkes at Assembly of Yahweh, Dunn at Midland Bible Church.
And this isn't just private faith.
No. According to the investigative reports, sermons, other published materials, they openly mix theology and governance. They explicitly call for state laws to be, quote, aligned with scripture.
And that theological view translates directly into specific policy goals.
Absolutely. It's a pretty comprehensive cultural and social agenda. You see financial backing for laws restricting reproductive rights, LGBTQ rights,
mm-hmm.
and also significant funding flowing down to local campaigns, targeting school boards, pushing for curriculum changes, trying to get specific books removed from libraries.
So the goal seems to be this holistic political environment where policy reflects a very specific religious viewpoint.
And the massive funding helps ensure those views get pushed through the legislature, even when there's resistance, maybe even within the Republican Party itself.
So if we step back, concentrated wealth shaping political outcomes like this. Political scientists actually have a term for it, don't they? Oligarchy.
That's the term. Ruled by a small, wealthy elite who can shape policy regardless of what the majority might prefer.
And the source material argues Texas is showing some key signs of this.
Several key hallmarks, yes. First, the concentrated funding we've been talking about. A tiny number of donors just dominating those internal party contests. They have so much influence, they effectively act as veto players.
Second, you mentioned the private media ecosystem.
Right. These donor-funded outlets, they don't just report news. They deliberately frame narratives to, well, intimidate lawmakers and push competing views to the side.
And third, this policy disconnect.
Yeah, that's striking. You see issues like the school voucher program advancing, getting huge funding, even though polls show consistent resistance, especially from rural Republican voters.
The ones who worry about their local public schools.
Exactly. That's probably the clearest sign that the money is overriding genuine grassroots feelings on some of these key issues.
So the sources conclude that while it's not, you know, formal dictatorship or anything.
Well, of course not.
It functions as this incredibly effective financial gatekeeper. So what does that actually mean for you, the average voter, when you show up to vote?
Well, it means that in a lot of primary races across Texas, you're often not really choosing between competing ideas or visions. You're choosing between candidates who've already been financially pre-approved, essentially vetted by the same small group of funders.
The money decides who's even on the primary ballot in the first place.
In many cases, yes. Long before you get to the general election in November.
Looking ahead then, the focus for this network stays locked in the primaries, right? That's the battleground.
Yeah.
We're talking about the big 2026 elections coming up. Governor Elton, Governor, Attorney General.
Absolutely. Their strategic goals seem pretty clear. Re-electing key Senate allies who can push their legislation through quickly. Replacing any remaining House members, especially in rural areas, who still resist things like vouchers.
And supporting judges and AG candidates?
Yes, supporting judicial and attorney general candidates who align with their goals for ideological litigation. Pushing the agenda through the courts as well. If 2026 looks anything like 2024, these donor networks are going to effectively write a big chunk of the state's political agenda before most voters even see a November ballot.
So what does this all really mean? I mean, the core issue here doesn't feel partisan exactly. It feels structural. It's about the erosion of democratic ideals, maybe. That Texas myth of rugged independence just kind of collapses if policy is being decided and enforced from a couple of private boardrooms in Midland and Cisco.
That's exactly right. This kind of oligarchic control, it doesn't operate through loud public fights usually. It works quietly. Through the steady drip of massive donations, through an obedient media arm, and through the fear lawmakers have of political reprisal.
And the source material suggests the only real fix is daylight.
Pretty much. Transparency. Transparent funding, open debate, and Texans actively demanding to know who their elected officials are actually working for. Who do they really serve?
That structural concern is really what stays with you after reading this.
Yeah. And the sources, they conclude by posing this really difficult, kind of challenging question. It builds on everything we've discussed. When you cast your vote, are you really choosing your candidate? Or are you just ratifying the choice already made by Wilkes and Dunn? If these donor networks are effectively financing and, you know, vetoing so much of the state's agenda before the general election even happens, what responsibility do you as a Texan have to demand more transparency about who's really funding the leaders you end up electing? That's the accountability question you kind of have to wrestle with.